I'm afraid I've got some bad news.
I knew it. I love when he does that.
Wrestling has more than one royal family.
Adrenaline in my soul. Something, something, Cody Rhodes.
Tribal chief around here. Yeah, you see me, the tribal chief. That's right.
On time. But let me go ahead and tell you.
Shut your bitch ass up.
Look how far we've come. You're still here. This is us. These are my confessions. Still going strong. Yeah, man. Let it go. So bad I can't stand it. Part of me wants to be perfectly candid. I would if I could, but I can't. So I won't, but I want to. I love to say yes, but it's best if I don't. Though I'd like to. That I'm letting you go. I love you so much that I'm telling you no. I would if I could, but I can't. So I won't, but I want to.
You're telling me things would be different. I wish your change of heart would change my mind. I want to believe you. I try us again. If I really believe there was some future in it, I would if I could, but I can't. So I won't, but I want.
What it do, everybody? Welcome to episode 412 of the Hoops Podcast here at Live in Living Color on this Thursday, May 9th, 2024. Hope all of you are in good spirits. It is usually the nefarious brother Adam, a.k.a. Joshy Lopez. Coming to you live for the Bravery Room here in lovely Chicago, Illinois. Hope you guys are having a good week so far. I know Mother's Day is coming up this weekend, so shout out to all the mothers who are celebrating this weekend. And for me, this type of the year is birthday season. There's so many birthdays. I've lost count of things coming up for my cousins. My mom's birthday is coming up on Monday. My grandma, her birthday is coming up next Tuesday. Your boy just turned 30 the other day on Tuesday. And life's good, man. Life's good. Cherishing it. First and foremost, before we get into the podcast this week, because I know you guys are pretty interested to see what I have to talk about when it comes from Backlash, show that we that I covered this past Saturday. We'll get into that. We'll do the clown of the week, and then we'll answer your questions in the back porch Q&A session. But like I said, man, I'm very appreciative for those of you who are continuing to support this show. We're currently at 1.3 million downloads on Spotify for podcasters, which is pretty cool. You guys can still see my transcript work at WrestlingHeadlines.com. And that's pretty much it for plugs, at least for the projects that I'm doing right now. Let me take a swig of water real quick. Oh, yeah. High quality H2O. But as I was saying, I got those projects going on. Obviously, you guys can follow me on Twitter if you like, at The Hoots Podcast. I'm on Instagram at Josh Lopez Music if you want to check me out there. Please do us a favor. If you're watching live on YouTube, please press the like button and subscribe to our channel as we're on the road to 1,000 subscribers. Definitely would like to get a plaque here sooner or later in this shrine. So that'd be pretty cool. And also, more importantly, if you guys support the show, make sure to do that via Spotify. It's free of charge. You don't have to pay anything. Follow the show on Spotify. It helps expand the reach of the show, and definitely would help me out a lot if we get more increase in our Spotify analytics and stuff like that. But all that being said, we will get into the wrestling stuff. I'm not going to get too overly sappy this week. I'm kind of taking this in stride. You know, this is a big accomplishment. I'm not putting a blind eye to it. I've been feeling it this entire week of, like, where I'm at in my life right now. And you see the shirt that I bought off of Amazon last weekend. It came in the other day. And this is something that fits me to a T here. And very, very cognizant of where I'm at in my life right now. And I'm just really excited for the future more than anything. You know, I was very touched by everybody that reached out to me over the past couple of days, this weekend as a whole, especially having my family from my dad's side of the family throw the party for me last Saturday after Backlash. It was a really special time, and I'm very grateful for everybody that showed up. Really, man, I'm just, I can't say that I'm at a loss of words. I'm just, I'm kind of glad that I got to this point, and it's kind of like having, like, weight off your shoulder. I don't have to worry about the countdown, like, the reality's in, like, I'm in my 30s now, and a lot of people say 30s are the best time of your life, and I'm excited to see that through, and just in a really good place. You know, one of the most important things that I try to express here on the Hoots Podcast in the 8 years I've been doing this show is about reminding yourself to get yourself back in a positive state of mind, having a clear perspective on things, appreciating the bigger picture, and also having the importance about healing and keeping yourself motivated. I really hope with my goal with this show, no matter how long you've been watching or listening to us, you've taken something positive from this, something that's helped you, uplift you, whether it's been a quote I've been able to share or Instagram reel where it gives out some life and love advice. If I've been able to help out in that manner, I think that's cool. Yes, this is a wrestling podcast, but it's also a life podcast, and we've had a lot of deep conversations here. And I'm very proud of that fact. Even when we started the show with Adam in the beginning of 2016, we've had these type of conversations. It's not lost on me that May is Mental Health Awareness Month. And I'm very fortunate that my birthday is in May. And somebody is like myself who does deal with mental health problems here and there. I'm very cognizant and appreciative of what this month means. And anything I can do to help people remind themselves that they're good enough gives me incentive purpose to continue record this show. Because let's be honest, folks, there's way too many fucking wrestling podcasts out there as it is. I think the last thing we all need is a wrestling podcast where we go back and forth and argue with each other about which company's booking things better and get into these silly arguments where we start talking in circles about who's over and not over and the daily jargon of misinformation throughout all these wrestling dirt sheets and everything in between. Look, man, I stay in my lane. I make play-by-play articles. That's my contribution in the wrestling media. I'm not a reporter. I don't pretend that I'm a reporter. I don't want to be a reporter. I'm very happy with what I do because I'm actually doing one of the few attempts at journalism within this realm of wrestling media. My point in what I'm saying here is that there's enough wrestling podcasts that it is. Let me try to bring something different to the table. Let's talk about life. Let's talk about sports. Let's talk about relationships. Let's talk about the fact that one of the big issues within our society is the lack of communication and understanding. You know, there's more I can bring to the table on this show than, okay, here's a review for this week's show. Let's talk about AEW and Double or Nothing coming up. I can do the wrestling jargon game with the rest of them. It's oversaturated in the market. It's an outdated concept to do the weekly recaps of these shows, plus, debating the... It's so funny, like, I'm starting to lose my train of thought here, because, like, you listen to a lot of these shows, and it's like, we'll do the recaps of the show, then we'll debate the weekly controversies coming out of wrestling Twitter. You know, and I'm like, do you get bored with yourself after a while saying the same things over and over and over again? It's another reason why I stopped doing What the Hell is Wrong with AEW. Again, to answer that question, I don't think that there's anything wrong with AEW existing. I don't want it to fold. I don't want it to go out of business, but I also could see through their phony nonsense and the fact that they still claim to be offering elite style wrestling. It's just a slap to the face of anybody who's actually watching the show without trying to kiss Tony Khan's ass every single week. You know, it's really that simple. I know for me, and this is a flaw of mine, and I can own up to it. I'm too blunt to a fault. I can't sugarcoat shit. I just can't. And especially when I notice things that are two-faced or very shady and just overall phony, I gotta call it out. And I do. So, and I made the conscious decision to stop doing What the Hell is Wrong with AEW because I didn't want that to be the only representation of what the show is. I didn't have the segment there to tear down AEW. I had it there to point out the flaws in the lazy arguments where all these people who are still trying to find their way into the AEW writing room are misleading the audience. That's really the basis of what that segment was for. I wanted to succeed, but they do a great job of getting in their own way. Like this week, we have Orange Cassidy taking a pile driver and getting up at a one count as if nothing happened. You know, we could do this every week, but I just started getting nauseating. I started to get exhausted and burnt out with the AEW shows, especially since I stopped transcribing them. I don't have any added incentive to watch these shows. MJF has been nowhere to be found. I'm so sick of Chris Jericho, and now he's got the learning tree. Who gives a shit? Like, I just don't care. So I'm using the better part of my judgment to come in here and talk about something I do want to talk about. And good thing here, a little transition here, as a little something new that I'm going to bring to the table here on the podcast this week, as the weeks go by, is I'm going to be reading chapters from this book that I bought off of Amazon. And in this light, it will help me out continue in a different step in my transformation journey from a confidence point of view and reassurance point of view, but also something that can help you guys out. And the book that I bought off of Amazon this weekend, it came in today before this recording, is Never Finish by David Goggins, which is Unshackle Your Mind and Win the War Within. I haven't read it yet, but I heard this is a great book. And originally I bought this as something to read while I'm in Florida in the beginning of June during my trip. But I thought this would be a nice little thing where I could read this out loud to you guys, and we could go through this journey together of reading this book. And like he's saying here, unshackle your doubts in your mind, as somebody like myself who deals with self-doubt, and winning the war within. I told you guys many a times, those who have been following along with my journey here, this transformation project, I am not just doing the weight loss thing. I'm really reevaluating everything within who Joshua Adam Lopez is. And I'm excited for this. So obviously David Goggins, very popular content creator about motivation. And this is also, David Goggins is also a New York Times bestselling author. He wrote a book called Can't Hurt Me. And I want to read it for you guys. So what we're going to do, each week I'll read one chapter from the book to you guys, and I hope you guys enjoy it, okay? So let's continue on here, shall we? Now, here for context clues, hold on, bring it here a little closer here. He has an intro here that's called The Warning Order. So I'm going to be reading this verbatim, and follow along with me, shall we? All right. Warning order, time zone, 24/7, task, organization, solo mission. Now, mind you, a lot of the things that are going to be read through here is his mindset, especially with him being a former U.S. Navy SEAL. So, let's have some fun with this, shall we? All right, task, organization, solo mission, situation number one. Your horizons have been limited by societal and self-imposed barriers. Two, mission, fight through resistance, seek unknown territory, redefine what's possible. Three, execution, read this book cover to cover, absorb the philosophy within, test all theories to the best of your ability, repeat, repetition will sharpen new skills and stimulate growth. B, this will not be easy. To succeed, you'll be required to face hard truths and challenge yourself like never before. This mission is about embracing and learning the lessons from each and every evolution so you can discover who you really are and can become. C, self-mastery is an unending process. Your job is never finished. That's the title of the book here. Give me 1 second. I missed the page here. Hold on. Okay, got it. All right, classified. The real work is unseen. Your performance matters most when nobody is watching. That's very true. By command of David Goggins, he writes his signature in rank and service chief U.S. Navy SEALs, and he's retired. So here we go. Introduction. This is not a self-help book. Nobody needs another sermon about the 10 steps or 7 stages or 16 hours a week that will deliver them from their stalled or fucked up life. Hit the local bookstore or surf Amazon, and you'll slip into a bottomless pit of self-help hype. Must feel good to consume because it sure does sell. Too bad most of it won't work. Not for real. Not forever. You might see progress here and there, but if you are broken like I used to be, or stuck wandering in an endless plateau while your true potential wastes away, books alone can't and won't fix you. Self-help is a fancy term for self-improvement, and while we should always strive to be better, improvement is often not enough. There are times in life when we can become so disconnected from ourselves that we must drill down and rewire those cut connections in our hearts, minds, and souls, because that is the only way to rediscover and reignite belief, that flicker in the darkness with the power to spark your evolution. Belief is a gritty, potent, phenomenal force. In the 1950s, a scientist named Dr. Kurt Richter proved this when he gathered dozens of rats and dropped them into a 30-inch deep glass cylinder filled with water. The first rat paddled on the surface for a short time, then swam to the bottom, where it looked for an escape hatch. It died within 2 minutes. Several others followed the same pattern. Some lasted as long as 15 minutes, but they all gave up. Richter was surprised because rats were damn good swimmers, yet in his lab, they drowned without much of a fight. So he tweaked the test. After he placed the next batch in their jars, Richter watched them, and right before it looked like they were about to give up, he and his tech scooped up the rats and towed them off and held them long enough for their heart and respiratory rates to normalize. Long enough for them to register on a psychological scale that they have been saved. They did this a few times before Richter placed a group of them back into their evil cylinders again to see how long they would last on their own. This time, the rats didn't give up. They swam their natural asses off for an average of 60 hours without any food or rest. One swam for 81 hours. In his report, Richter suggested that the first round of subjects gave up because they were hopeless and that the second batch persisted for so long because they knew it was possible someone would come along and save their sorry asses. The popular analysis these days is that Richter's interventions flipped the switch in the rat brain, which illuminated the power of hope for all of us to see. I love this experiment, but hope isn't what got into those rats. How long does hope really last? It may have triggered something initially, but no creature is going to swim for their life for 60 hours straight without food, powered by hope alone. They needed something a lot stronger to keep them breathing, kicking, and fighting. When mountaineers tackle the tallest peaks and steepest faces, they are usually tethered to a rope fixed to anchors in the ice or rocks, so when they slip, they don't slide off the mountain and tumble to their deaths. They may fall 10 or 12 feet, then they get up, dust themselves off, and try again. Life is the mountain we're all climbing, but hope is not an anchor point. It's too soft, fluffy, and fleeting. There's no substance behind hope. It's not a muscle you can develop, and it's not rooted down deep. It's an emotion that comes and goes. Richter touched something in his rats that was damn near unbreakable. He may not have noticed them adapting to their life-or-death trial, but they have had to figure out a more efficient technique to preserve energy. With each passing minute, they became more and more resilient until they started to believe that they would survive. Their confidence did fade as the hours piled up. It actually grew. They weren't hoping to be saved. They refused to die. The way I see it, belief is what turned ordinary lab rats into marine mammals. There are two levels to belief. There's the surface level, which our coaches, teachers, therapists, and parents love to preach. Believe in yourself, they all say, as if the thought alone could keep us afloat when the odds are against us in the battle of our lives. But once exhaustion sets in, doubt and insecurity tend to penetrate and dissipate the flimsy brand of belief. Then there's the belief born in resilience. It comes from working your way through layers of pain, fatigue, and reason, and ignoring the ever-present temptation to quit until you strike a source of fuel you didn't even know existed. One that eliminates all doubt, makes you certain of your strength and the fact that eventually you'll prevail. So long as you keep moving forward, that is the level of belief that can defy the expectations of scientists and change everything. It's not an emotion to be shared or an intellectual concept, and nobody else can give it to you. It must bubble up from within. When you are lost at sea and no one's coming to save you, there are only two options. You'll either swim in You will either swim hard and figure out how to last as long as it takes, or you are bound to drown. I was born with holes in my heart and sickle cell trait, and into a childhood torched by toxic stress and learning disabilities, I had minimal potential. And by the time I turned 24, I knew I was in danger of wasting my life. Many people get it twisted and think my accomplishments directly correlate to my potential. My accomplishments do not equate to my potential. The little bit I had was buried so deep, most people would never have found it. Not only did I find it, I learned to maximize it. I knew that there could be so much more to my story than the wreckage I saw around me, and now it's the time to decide if I had it in me to go as hard as I could for as long as it took to become a more self-empowered human being. I fought through doubt and insecurity. I wanted to quit every single day, but eventually belief kicked in. I believed I could evolve, and that same belief has given me the strength and focus to persevere whenever I've been challenged for over two decades. More often than not, I challenged myself to see how far I could push it and how many more chapters I can add to my story. I'm still seeking new territory, still curious just how high I might rise from the bottom of the barrel. A lot of folks feel like they're missing something in their lives, something money can't buy, and that makes them miserable. They attempt to fill the void with material things they can see, feel, and touch, but that empty feeling won't go away. It fades some until it all gets quiet again. That familiar gnawing in the gut returns, reminding them that the life that they're living is not the fullest expression of who they are or might become. Unfortunately, most people are not desperate enough to do anything about it. When you're hogtied in conflicting emotions and other people's opinions, it's impossible to tap into belief and easy drift away from that urge to evolve. You can be itchy as fuck to experience something different, to be somewhere different, or to become something different, but when the slightest resistance arises to challenge your resolve, you moonwalk right back into the unsatisfied person you were before. Still itching, still josing to be someone new, yet still trapped in your unfulfilling status quo. And you are nowhere alone. Social media has compounded and spread this virus of dissatisfaction, which is why the world is now populated by damaged people consuming airy gratification, hunting an immediate dopamine fix with no substance at all behind it. Instead of staying focused on growth, millions of minds have been affected with lack, leaving them feeling even lesser than. Their internal dialogue becomes that much more toxic as this population of weak-ass, entitled victims of life itself multiplies. It's funny, we question so many things about the way our lives are going. We wonder what it would be like if we looked different, had more of a head start, or were given a boost at one time or another. Very few people question their own warped minds. Instead, they collect slights, dramas, and problems, hoarding them until they are bloated with stale regret and envy, which form the roadblock stopping them from becoming their truest, most capable selves. All over the world, hundreds of millions of people choose to live that way. But there is another way of thinking and another way of being. It helped me regain my control of life. It allowed me to eviscerate all obstacles in my path until my growth factor became damn near limitless. I'm still haunted, but I've traded in my demons for evil-ass angels. And now it's a good haunting. I'm haunted by my future goals, not my past failures. I'm haunted by what I may still become. I'm haunted by my own continued thirst for evolution. The work is often as miserable and thankless as it ever was. And although there are techniques and skills I've developed that can help along the way, there's no certain number of principles, hours, or steps in this process. It's about constant effort, learning, and adaptations, which demands unwavering discipline and belief. The kind that looks like a depression. The kind that looks a lot like desperation. See, I am the lab rat who refused to die, and I'm here to show you how to get to the other side of hell. Most theories on performance and possibility are hatched in the controlled environment of a sterile laboratory and spread in university lecture halls, but I am not a theorist, I'm a practitioner. Similar to how the late, great Stephen Hawking explored the dark matter of the universe, I am intensely passionate about exploring the dark matter of the mind, all of our untapped energy, capacity, and power. My philosophy has been tested and proven in my own mental lab through all the many fuck yous, failures, and feats that shaped my life in the real world. After each chapter, you'll find an evolution. In the military, evolutions are drills, exercises, or practices meant to sharpen your skills. In this book, there are hard truths we all should face, and philosophies and strategies you can use to overcome whatever is in your way and excel in life. Like I said, this is definitely not a self-help book. This is a boot camp for your brain. It's a what the fuck are you doing with your life book. It's the wake-up call you don't want and probably didn't even know you needed. Rise up, motherfuckers. Let's work. So that is the introduction here. And the first chapter here is called... You know, I think we could continue here. This one has 14 pages. I mean, I can keep going if you guys want. You know what? Let's read this first chapter. Why not? Let's have some fun with it, okay? Let's take a sip of water real quick. All right. Bye again. For those who are watching live on YouTube and Facebook, Never Finish by David Goggins. Go get the book, okay? Chapter 1, Maximize Minimal Potential. I sat among thousands of combat veterans at a packed Kansas City Convention Center for the 2018 Veterans of Foreign Wars National Convention. I wasn't just an active member, I was their guest. I've been flown in to receive the VFW's prestigious Americanism Award, an annual honor for those who demonstrate a commitment to service, patriotism, the betterment of America, society, and helping fellow veterans. The most famous past recipient was one of my heroes, Senator John McCain, survived 5.5 years as a POW during the Vietnam War. I always admired the courage he exemplified back then, and throughout his very public life, he continued to set the standard for how I believe men should handle hard times. Now, my name was going to be alongside his. I was about to receive the greatest honor in my life so far. I should have been proud as hell instead of confused as fuck. For over an hour, I sat in the audience between my mother, Jackie, and my uncle, John Gardner. That's a lot of time to contemplate the meaning of the moment. And all I could come up were the reasons that I shouldn't be there. That nobody should know the name David Goggins, much less put me in the same sentence as Senator McCain. Not because I didn't earn my spot, but because the circumstances that life served me should never have led me here. Sure, I'm a winner now, but I was born a loser. There are a lot of born losers out there. Every fucking day, babies are born into poverty and broken families, like I was. Some lose their parents in accidents, others are abused and neglected. Many of us are born with disabilities, some physical, others mental or emotional. It's as if every human being is issued their own personal piñata just for making it out of the womb alive. No one gets a sneak preview of what's in their piñata, but whatever it is will set them up one way or another. Some of us smack that fucker open and sweep things. Some of us smack that fucker open and sweep things rain down. Those are the ones who have it relatively easy, at least at first. Some are empty as a dry well. Others are worse than empty. They're packed with nightmares, and the hauntings begin as soon as the baby takes his first breath. That was me. I was born into a terror dome. As the speakers took their turns on the mic, I was deep in my own dark cave, reliving the countless bloody beatings my father dealt to my mother, my brother, and me. I watched us escape to Brazil, Indiana, only to settle just 10 miles from an active chapter of the Ku Klux Klan. And guess where those motherfuckers sent their kids to school? I recall the steady flow of the racist threats from so many of my classmates and how I cheated my way through school and learned nothing. The thought of my mother's fiancé, Wilmoth, a would-be father figure, who was murdered before he could become my stepdad. I recall my repeated attempts at the Armed Service Vocational Aptitude Battery, a standardized test required for all military recruits to fulfill my dream of becoming a parachutist. After I finally passed that dread test and enlisted, I quit pararescue training when the water evolution became too hard. That brilliant decision ultimately led me to becoming a 300-pound graveyard shift exterminator at Ecolab, ranking in $1,000 a month at 24 years old. I was a shell of a man at that point with no self-esteem or self-respect. I was still haunted by the same old demons that had tailed me from birth. And the harsh reality was that I lacked everything I needed to become the man I wanted to be. Mind you, I was thinking about all of that to punish myself. I was sifting through the files searching for the catalyst, the moment that restarted the fire and ignited something primal inside of me. I need to remember exactly how and when I flipped the script and managed to build a life of honor and service, but I kept coming up empty. I was so deep in my brain cave, I didn't even hear them call my name. I wouldn't have reacted at all if my mom had nudged my arm. Even now, I don't remember walking up the stage steps with her because I was still floating between my past and my disorienting present. I heard her read my resume, detailing the money I raised for veteran causes and the objectives I've met over the course of my career. Before I knew it, they put a medal around my neck and the audience was on their feet applauding. That was the surest sign yet that this born loser had been reborn somewhere. Along the way, that there had been a moment that sparked my metamorphosis. When it was my turn at the microphone, I gazed out at all the unfamiliar faces, members of a brotherhood and sisterhood that I will always be a part of. The fact that this recognition came from them was the deepest honor, but I didn't know how to thank them. I was a sought-after public speaker by then, comfortable in front of crowds large or small, factoring my work as a recruiter for the military, and I've been a professional public speaker for over a decade. I rarely get butterflies, but the summer day in Kansas City, I was nervous as hell, and my mind was still clouded. I tried to shake it off and started by thanking my grandfather, Sergeant Jack. He would be the proudest man in the world to see me up here right now, I said. Choked up, I paused, I took a deep breath to compose myself and started again. I'd like to thank my mom, who I turned to my mother, and when our eyes met, the moment that permanently changed my life finally hit me, and the power of that realization was overwhelming. I'd like to thank my mom, who, my voice cracked again, I couldn't hold back the flood any longer. I closed my eyes and stopped. Like a dream that only lasts seconds yet feels like hours. Time stretched out and scenes from the ultimate turning point in my life. The last time I ever saw my father. Colonized in my mind. If I hadn't taken that trip, you would never have heard of me. I was 24 years old when I realized I was broken inside. Something had gone numb in my soul. And that numbness, that lack of deep feeling, dictated what my life had become. It's why I quit going after my goals, my biggest dreams, whenever things got hard. Quitting was just another detour. It never bothered me much because when you're numb, you can't process what's happening to you or within you. I didn't know the power of my mind yet, and because of that, I had ballooned into a fat ass and taken a job as a cockroach sniper in restaurants. I had my excuses, of course. My numbness was the survival mechanism. It had been beaten into me by my father. By the time I turned 7, I developed a POW mindset, a POW mindset. Going numb was how I took my beatings and maintained some level of self-respect. Even after my mother and I escaped, I continued to be stalked by tragedy and failure, and numbness was how I coped with the fact that I was losing all I ever knew. When you're a born loser, your goal is to survive, not thrive. You learn to lie, to cheat, to do what it takes to fit in. You may become a survivor, but it's a miserable existence. Just like the cockroaches I was assigned to kill, you find yourself scurrying in from the shadows to claim the bare necessities while hiding your true self from the light at all costs. Born losers are the ultimate cockroaches. We do what we have to. That attitude often enables some pretty severe character defects. I certainly had some. I was a quitter, a liar, a fat, lazy motherfucker, and I was deeply depressed. I could feel myself unraveling a little at a time. Fed up and frustrated, bitter and angry, I couldn't take much more of my sorry-ass life. If I did change and change soon, I knew I would die a loser or worse. I might end up like my father, the hustler who was one quick twitch away from violence. I was consumed by misery and groping for some mental foothold to keep me from giving up for good. The only thing that I could come up with was to go back to that house in the Paradise Road that still haunts me. I had to go to Buffalo, New York and look my father in the eye, because when you're living in hell, the only way to find your way out is to confront the devil himself. I was hoping to find some answers that would help me change my life. That's what I told myself anyway as I crossed into Ohio from Indiana and veered northeast. I hadn't seen my old man in 12 years. It had been my decision to stop seeing him. At that time, the court system allowed children to make those decisions once they turned 12. I made that choice mostly out of respect for and loyalty to my mom. He stopped beating us after we left Buffalo, but the one thing that never went numb was how I felt about the way my mother endured at his hands. Still over the years, I had questioned that decision and began to wonder if my memories, if the stories I told myself were true. On the long drive, I didn't listen to music. All I heard were the competing voices in my head. The first voice accepted me as I was. "It's not your fault, David. None of this is your fault. You're doing the best you can with what you've been given." That was the voice I've been listening to my entire life. "It's not my fault" was my favorite refrain. It explained and justified my lot in life and the dead-end path in front of me, and it played 24/7. However, for the first time, another voice chimed in. Or maybe it was the first time I stopped listening to only to what I wanted to hear. "Roger that. It ain't your fucking fault that you were dealt a bad hand, but it is your responsibility. How long will you allow your past to hold you back before you finally take control of your future?" Compared to the first, more nurturing voice in my head, this one was ice cold, and I did my best to tune it out. The closer I got to Buffalo, the younger and more helpless I felt. When I was 150 miles away, I felt like I was 60 years old. As I pulled off the highway and moved through the Buffalo City streets, I felt like I was 8, the same age I was when we packed all our shit into garbage bags and walked out the door. Once I walked into the house, it was August 1983 all over again. The paint on the walls, the floors, the appliances, and the furniture, all of it was the same. While it looked a lot smaller and out of date, it was still the haunted house I remember, filled with the years of grisly memories and palpable dark energy. However, my father was warm and more affectionate than I remember. Trunis was always a charmer, and he acted genuinely happy to see me. As we caught up, I found myself laughing at his jokes, slightly confused by the man in front of me. After a while, he checked his watch and grabbed his coat. He held the front door open for his wife, Sue, and me. We headed for the car. "Where are we going?" I asked. "You remember the schedule?" he said. "It's time to open up." The first thing I noticed about Skateland from the outside was that it needed a paint job. Inside, the floor and walls were chipped and stained, and the whole place smelled funky. The office had deteriorated too. That sofa we slept on as kids, where my mom caught him cheating on more than one occasion, still hadn't been replaced. It was filthy as hell, and that's where I sat after the grand tour while my father headed upstairs to spin hip-hop records in the Vermilion Room. I felt dizzy and disoriented. It was strange how far the old man had let his standards slip. He wasn't the strong, exciting, demanding figure I remember. He was old, weak, soft, in the middle, and lazy. He wasn't the devil at all. He was human. Had I been feeding myself a false history as I lingered in that office, steeped in the past, I wondered what else I've been wrong about. Then at around 10 o'clock, the baseline dropped upstairs, and the ceiling started to shudder. Shudder and shake. Within seconds, I heard hollering laughter and that steady stomping to the beat. In the same way a song can take you back to the distinct time and place, that thumping bass returned me to my darkest days. I've been funneled into a relapse of my childhood nightmare. I closed my eyes and saw myself as a first grader, tossing and turning on that very couch, trying to sleep after working all night and not being able to get more than a wink. My mother was there too, struggling to paper over our pain with home-cooked dinners prepared on portable electric burners in a cramped office. I saw the helplessness and fear in her eyes, and it brought back all the stress and pain, frustration, and depression that came with it. Those memories were real. There was no denying it. I was disgusted to be sitting on that couch. I was sickened to have let my guard down and enjoy my father's company, even for a few minutes. I felt like I was doing a disservice to my mother, and the longer I sat there and watched the ceiling shake, the more rage rose up inside until I was on my feet and was racing up back a stairwell into the Vermilion Room where my demon was slurping whiskey, the smoky exhilarator that gave him his power. As a kid, I rarely saw the space in full bloom, and while it had lost most of its shine, it was still happening. What was once a glitzy nightclub serving fun to a well-dressed crowd had become a packed dive bar flush with hip-hop. Trunis was in the DJ booth orchestrating the energy, spinning records, and sucking down scotch after scotch until closing time. I watched him work, drink, and flirt, and the more wasted he became, the more my memory synced with reality. After locking up, I drove us all to Denny's for an after-hours breakfast, just like old times. More than 15 years had passed, yet the ritual remained the same as ever. Trunis was sloppy as hell by then, and he could tell it made me uncomfortable, which ticked him off. While we waited for our food, he glared at me as he dissed my grandparents and claimed they were responsible for the breakup of his family. Liquor always brought his ugliness out, and I heard that argument so many times before, it didn't have much effect on me. But when he started in on my mom, I wasn't having any of it. "Don't go there," I said quietly, but he didn't care. He barked about how everyone turned on him and how weak and sorry we all were. His spittle flew, the vein in his temple throbbed. "Trunis, please stop," Sue said. There was something in her tone, a mixture of fear and dread that I recognized. She wasn't standing up and telling him how she felt. She was pleading with him. It reminded me so much of my mother and how powerless she felt when Trunis would rage on and on. He was the type of guy who would call women over to the house at 3:55 p.m. knowing my mom would be coming home at 4 o'clock. He wanted her to catch them in the act to show her that he had all the power and would do whatever the fuck he wanted at any time of day or night. It's the same reason he beat me in front of her and did the same to her in front of me. The very same day we left, Sue moved in, yet he often told her and anyone else who would listen how beautiful and smart my mother was, as if she were the one who got away. He needed Sue to feel she wasn't good enough for him, and never would be. For the first time in my life, I felt for Sue and realized that Trunis' specialty was the weaponization of disrespect. That's an interesting word. It was a tactic he used to bully women and children into submission. He knew that once he choked the motherfucker out mentally, they would lose all their fight and self-respect, which would make it easier to manipulate and dominate them. That's what he was after, not love. He created dominance and subservience. It was like oxygen to him. He harvested souls with violence and rage. He wanted the people closest to him to feel wounded and empty. Decades later, my mother still struggles with self-respect, decision-making, and confidence. Trudy's face was red from alcohol, his jaw clenched with tension as he kept talking shit. There was no doubt that he was the bully and abuser I remembered, but not because he hated my mom or Sue or my brother or me, but because he was a sick, fucked up old man who didn't believe he was worth a damn and could not and would not help himself. Years later, I would learn that he had suffered abuse when he was a kid. His father made him stand in front of a flaming hot coal furnace in a dark room, and after a torturous waiting period, his dad would show up with a belt and lash him, buckle side first. If he moved away from the belt, he would get burned. So he had to accept his father's lashes and try not to move. He never dealt with his trauma. Those memories festered into demons, and before he even knew it had happened, the victim became the abuser. Whenever he got drunk and the party died down, he self-soothed by picking on people weaker than him. He beat them up. He ran them down. Sometimes he he threatened to kill them. But as soon as the abusive episode was over, he would erase it from history. The beatings he took never happened. He liked to think of himself as a big man, but never accepted responsibility for anything he did that went wrong, which didn't make him any kind of a man at all. I suppose I was in that Denny's booth with him because part of me was hoping Trudis would apologize, but he didn't think he had anything to be sorry for. He was straight up delusional, and his delusions demoralized all of us. They were also contagious. For years, he made me bleed, and he made me doubt myself. He transferred his demons to me through the lashes of the leather belt and the open palm of his hand. And like him, I grew up believing in delusions. I had to become an eagle sociopath like him, but I never took responsibility for my own shortcomings or my failures. Sitting there listening to him rave, my blood run hot. Made my blood run hot. Okay. I got that right. Sweat bead on my forehead, and all I could think about was payback. It was his turn to suffer at my hands. I wanted to make him bleed for my pain. I wanted to beat that motherfucker down right there in the Denny's. I was hair-triggered close to allowing my father to turn me into a violent maniac, just like I remembered him to be. He recognized the fire in my eyes because it was as if he were looking into a mirror, and it scared the shit out of him. The weather changed in our booth. He stopped ranting mid-sentence. His eyes went glassy and wide, and in the fluorescent light of the dinner, he looked meek and small. I nodded as I recognized in that very moment the lie that inspired my trip to Buffalo. I hadn't driven all the way from Indianapolis as some first step towards self-improvement. No, I was there looking for a free pass. I wanted to collect more evidence that all my many failures and disappointments stem from the same root cause, my father, Trudis Goggins. I've been hoping that everything I believed all those years was true, because if Trudis was indeed the devil in disguise, that gave me someone to blame, and I was looking for a cop-out. I needed Trudis to be the flaw in my existence in order to claim the lifetime warranty on my get-out-of-jail-free card. Trudis was flawed, alright. He showed me that all over again. But he wasn't my flaw. The second voice was right. Unless I took responsibility for my demons, the ones he put on me, I had no shot at becoming anything other than a perpetual loser or another miserable hustler like him. When the food arrived, Trudis stuffed his face while I reflected on how much power I've given him over the years. It wasn't his fault I experienced racism or barely graduated high school. Yes, he beat me and my brother up and tortured my mother. He was a fucked up man, but I hadn't lived with him since I was 8 years old. When was I going to take my soul back from him? When was I going to go own my own choices, my failures, my future? When would I finally accept responsibility for my life, take action, and wipe the slate clean? Nobody said a word while I drove us back to Paradise Road. Trudis watched me with a mix of drunken sadness, loss, and anger as I grabbed my car keys from the kitchen counter and walked straight out the door. I planned on spending the weekend, but I couldn't stand to be in his presence for one more minute longer. While the words were never spoken, I believe we both knew that we'd be the last time we would ever see each other. The funny thing was, I didn't even hate Trudis anymore because I finally understood him. On the drive back home, I turned the volume way down on the nurturing voice in my head and tuned into reality. In places of excuses, it was time for ownership of exactly who I'd become in all of its ugliness, and that meant acknowledging that my thin skin was definitely part of the problem. All of us are dealt circumstances in life. We don't have any power to control. Sometimes those things are painful. Occasionally, they are tragic or inhuman. While the accountability mirror, which I tagged with sticky notes filled with real talk, daily tasks, and a few bigger goals, had helped me get to a certain point, those fixes were surface level. I've never attempted to dive down and solve the root cause of my problems, so I crumbled whenever life asked me to dig deeper and persevere in order to achieve something that could lead towards sustained success. I spent my entire life in the surface waters hoping that my luck would change, and everything I dreamed of would fall into place for me. That night on my drive home to Indiana, I accepted the hard truth that hoping and wishing are like gambling on long shots. And if I wanted to be better, I had to start living every day with a sense of urgency, because that is the only way to turn odds in your favor. Reality can be a motherfucker when all of your excuses are stripped away and you're exposed for exactly who and what you have become, but the truth can also be liberating. That night, I accepted the truth about myself. I finally swallowed reality, and now I had my future was undetermined. Anything was possible as long as I adopted a new mindset. I needed to become someone who refused to give in, who simply finds a way no matter what. I needed to become bulletproof, a living example of resilience. Think of a packet of seeds scattered in the garden. Some seeds get more sunlight, more water, and are planted in nourishing topsoil. And because they're put in the right place at the right time, they can rise from seeding to settling to a thriving tree. Seeds planted into too much shade or that don't get enough water may never become anything at all unless someone transplants them, saves them before it's too late. Then are those seedlings that take for the light on their own. They creep from the shade into the sunshine without being transplanted. They find it without anybody digging them up and placing them in the light. They find strength where there is none. That is resilience. Once we're born, our natural instinct is to look for ways to thrive. But not everybody does, and sometimes there's a damn good reason for it. I was brought up in the darkness. My roots were flimsy. I was barely tethered to rock-hard ground. My spirit, soul, and determination weren't nourished in the light. But on that ride home, I realized that only I had the power to determine my future, and I had no choice to make. I could continue living in the haven of low expectations where it was comfortable and safe to believe that my life was not my fault or my responsibility, and that my dreams were just that, fantasies that would never be because time and opportunity were not and would never be on my side. Or I could leave all that behind for a world of possibility, much more pain, unfathomably hard work, and zero guaranteed success. I could choose resilience. At 24 years old, a powerful force was gathering within me, waiting to be unleashed. At 24 years old, a powerful force was gathering within me, waiting to be unleashed. I would soon call upon it to complete two hell weeks, become a member of the Navy SEAL Air and Land SEALs team, and complete Army Ranger School. I compete in ultra races and break up the world pull-up record. Thanks to that one night in Buffalo, New York, when I accepted my fate and became determined to tap into my resilience, I find the will to transform myself into the grittiest motherfucker ever to find light where there was none. I had never been a pal like John McCain and countless others, but I lived like a prisoner in my own mind for the first 24 years of my life. Once I liberated myself and began to evolve, I learned that it is the rare warrior who embraces the adversity of being born into hell and then, with their own free will, chooses to add as much suck as they can find to turn each day into boot camp of resiliency. Those are the ones who don't stop at good enough. They aren't satisfied with just being better than they used to be. They are forever evolving and strive for the highest level of self. Eventually, I became one of them, which is why I was honored at the BFW convention. I would like to thank my mom. The audience gave me another round of applause as my sobs ebbed and I returned to present moment. Who never picked me up when I fell, she let me pick myself up when I was knocked down. By the time I was done speaking, all the emotion had drained and cleared. Honored and humbled to have received an award that most people would consider the crowning achievement of their career, I walked off that stage into the unknown. They say iron sharpens iron, but I had left the military behind, and there was no one pushing me on a day-to-day basis any longer. Fuck it. I was always destined to be that one warrior, content to be that motherfucker who sharpens his own sword alone. That is the first chapter here of Never Finish by David Goggins. What I like about this book here is that they had the chapters and then it continues on with the evolution of your mind and thought. And let me look at the concept here. What I'll do here, I'll read evolution. So what he does, he separated a couple of different chapters, and then the steps in between is he called those evolution. What I'll do here, after we're done with the Back Porch Q&A session, I will I'll read evolution number one for you guys, and then we'll continue on with this journey. But definitely wanted to read this for you guys. Nice little project for us, and I hope you guys were able to take something away from that. That's actually my first time ever reading a book live on air for you guys, so I hope you guys appreciated that. Anyways, we need to take a break here because we got to get to talk some wrestling. So for the five of you who have been hanging out with here through Twitter, I see you. I appreciate it. When we come back, we'll get to what happened this week in WWE right here on episode 412 of the Hoots Podcast. We'll be right back. Alright, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Hoots Podcast. This is going to be an abbreviated edition of the podcast at Hoots. We got pay-per-view to recap here, and I got some other stuff to get to. Of course, we got the Clown of the Week we got to get to later on as well. But let's start off with Backlash this past Saturday from Lyon, France. First and foremost, I want to say congratulations to the crowd in France for both nights through SmackDown and the Lash of Backs. Backlash was a fantastic show. I had a blast covering it. The crowd was fantastic. Obviously, I know they were the story, I guess, of the weekend, if you want to be honest with yourself. But I thought there's a lot of good stuff from the angles that came out of it, the matches we saw on Backlash. I don't know about you guys. What was your favorite match of the show? What was your takeaway from Backlash? Let me know in the comment section of the video here, or hit me up during the weekend at the Hoots Podcast on Twitter. I'd love to know what was the favorite match from you guys that stood out the most. I think for me, and this is a safe answer to choose here, but I think my favorite match that I did was the Cody Rhodes and AJ Styles match for the WWE title. It was fantastic. Those are still running with the crowd is going to turn on Cody bit. You guys are just making yourself look sillier and sillier as the weeks and months go by. The fact that this narrative is still out there, where you're not, where you're blatantly basically ignoring these crowds. sometimes a lot of people with blue check marks and they have podcasts and they do a lot of stuff through X, they think that they have all the answers to all the wrestling promotions and they just put a blind eye to because it doesn't fit their narrative. So it doesn't matter that Cody Rhodes has been getting consistent pops. Much more than John Cena was when he first had his first major babyface run. But, yeah, keep saying that the crowd's going to turn on him. Yep, they're still cheering for the guy. And because now he's the face of the company, now suddenly Cody Rhodes is unable to have barn burners. I don't know what we've been watching, to be honest with you, because that guy brought the goods. And honestly, AJ Styles having a good match is like saying Stevie Wonder wrote a wonderful song. Like, no shit. Like, you know, phenomenal. And I can use that pun intended because it was a phenomenal match. A lot of cool different sequences. That super Cody cutter that Cody gave to Styles before the crossroads was fantastic. you know, AJ doing that brain buster on the apron was nasty. By the way, if we're going to be acknowledging all these different companies and using pro wrestling again, it's okay to say Yoshigiroshi, which is that fireman's carry, kind of like an AA into like a net breaker, you know, where you like do an AA onto your knee. That's a Yoshigiroshi. Something I saw Hirooki Goto do. AJ Styles has done it a bunch of times now. Yoshihashi does a Yoshigiroshi as well. I think Kevin Owens did a Yoshigiroshi before. It's okay to say Yoshigiroshi on a broadcast now. I don't think Vince is going to have an issue with it. But let's continue on here. Really enjoyed the women's triple threat match. Bayley retains over Naomi and Tiffany Stratton. Tiffany is going to be a megastar. I think that's obvious to everybody. Her ability from an athletic point of view is just on another level. And her attention to detail, too, is very good from somebody that doesn't have that much of experience. Obviously, smoking hot, great to look at, good on promos. Literally, Tiffany Stratton is everything you would want for a WWE superstar. And she checks all the boxes. I thought Backlash was definitely Naomi's best showing from a match point of view since her return at the Royal Rumble. I thought she was fantastic. But, you know, Bayley retains with a roll-up over Naomi, and we have the cry base out there. Oh, I can't believe that Bayley won with a roll-up. What a terrible finish. Since when a match can't end via a wrestling move in a wrestling match? Oh, it's a terrible finish. It's a triple threat match. You know you could lose the title without getting pinned or submitted. It's desperation. Tell me how that does not, how does a roll up to win a match where you're shipping your body weight against somebody and capitalizing on their lack of ring awareness? Like, tell me how that does not make sense. It's a wrestling move in a wrestling match. This is stuff I talk about wrestling Twitter. They come up with the silliest arguments just to think that they sound cool, but really they sound fucking stupid, to be honest with you. Anyways, by the way, shout out to CM Punk. Loved his promo on Raw this week. Great to see that. Rocking the straight edge shirt today in honor of CM Punk, and also with it being 30 years old, I hold no shame for the fact that I am straight edge, so that's why I'm wearing this shirt today. Anyways, shout out to Punk. I thought he did a great job on that countdown show with Jackie Rubin and Big E, and again, him trolling Drew McIntyre is always entertaining, so good to see my boy Punk on TV. Congratulations go out to Bianca Belair and Jade Cargill on becoming your new women's tag team champions at the expense of the Kabuki Warriors. There were some really good spots. I thought that little transition where they do the DDT into the wheelbarrow German suplex from Jade Cargill, I thought was very nice how Jade did the transition into Jaden. For the finish, I thought it was really nice as well. But this was definitely not a great match. Sometimes, at points, it was bowling shoe ugly, to be honest with you. More on the Kabuki Warrior side more than anything. You know, I know that Kairi Sane gets a lot of praise and love for her work from Stardom and in Japan. But, gosh, that girl can be very fucking sloppy at times. I just got to call a spade, but I thought they made the best out of it. I am happy for Bianca and Jade. I think they'll be a good tag team, but how long does it last? I know a lot of people said that they want to see Bianca Belair against Jade Cargill at WrestleMania, but who turns on who? I'm more leaning on Bianca turning on Jade. And in a way that can help Jay become even a bigger star down the road when she puts down Bianca Belair. So it's something to be on the lookout because Bianca is still being petty and angry about Bayley and what happened with her damage control. And sometimes she's talking with no sense. So it's something to look out for. But, you know, good opportunity for Bianca to do something different, which is not so heavily reliant on a world title being on the line, per se. And I think these ladies can have some good matches with the other tag teams in the division. You know, you got Katana Chance and Kate Carter. You got Alba Fire and Isla Dawn. You got Piper Niven and Chelsea Green. Who knows who else will be joining forces along the way. You know, I know Blair Davenport is on the SmackDown roster. Maybe she links up with somebody and becomes a tag team. We got options, so I think it's cool that Bianca and Jade are a tag team, and obviously you still got the Kabuki Warriors around too, so you got options there. What else? Did I forget anything? Yes, Damian Priest and Jey Uso. Very, very fun and entertaining match. I thought this was a very nice showing, nice showcase for Damian Priest. I know there was a lot of tension that went on with the Judgment Day and their interference. Damian Priest did retain over Jey Uso. Yes, the Jey Uso entrance was fantastic. One of the best visuals you'll ever see for a wrestling show. Definitely can see that on the highlight package down the road. But I thought the right guy won. It left more questions up in the air as far as the future of the Judgment Day is concerned. Damian tried to rectify that on Raw this past week and said everything is fine. I don't know. It's kind of like that that meme where you see the dog just sitting there with the fire around. And it's like, oh, everything is fine. No, everything is not fine. We got Dominic Mysterio lurking out of Liv Morgan's dressing room. I mean, hey, more power to you, Goose. Score yourself some waterfall while you can. But Dominic is fixated working with Liv Morgan. He's bringing in other people he has history with that they don't belong in the clubhouse, like Carlito this week. And he's about to get the boot from Judgment Day. JD, do you ever really consider JD to be part of Judgment Day besides being Finn Balor's lackey on TV? No, but again, I'm not here to knock JD. I actually been a fan of Jordan Devlin back to the NXT UK days, so I know how good he is. But when you look at the context of his journey within the Judgment Day, do you actually consider him an actual member of the Judgment Day? I don't know. So that's the question. Does this lead to Priest against Balor? They start fighting with each other, and maybe that allows somebody like a Drew McIntyre to win Money in the Bank and immediately cash in on Priest after the fact. Like a little synergy that way. You know, those are the things that are running through my mind as I look through the playing field through that. And then I talked about Cody and AJ. Fantastic match. Let's talk about this. We got a new member in the Bloodline. Tagaloa is now part of the Bloodline. And I want to give some credit and a shout out to the good brother Chris Saleta at X-Teen24X on Twitter for bringing this up to my attention in one of his questions. I do pay attention. He made a reference to Tagaloa in one of the questions he sent for the Back Porch Q&A session. By the way, for those who are watching and listening live, you can send me a question, anything that's on your mind. I'll answer them to the best of my ability on here. But he brought up the idea, hey, will we see Tagaloa or Hikuleo show up? And I believe I answered that question saying, yeah, I think it'd be nice to have Tagaloa part of WWE. You bring GOD back together fully, and they could be a tag team and cost wreckage for real on SmackDown. Then you could have Jacob Fatu on the side of the Usos, you know, once they reunite with each other. And you still got so much money on the table when it comes to the Bloodline. And I popped. I was pretty excited. I've been a fan of Tongaloa for a long time. I enjoy his work. He had a pretty nasty knee injury last year. It that caused him to be out of action for a while. He came back through the G1, had a really good performance in the G1 last year. And to see him now back in WWE is pretty cool. And that opening match was a lot of fun to transfer at, too. I think from a sports entertainment standpoint, I think that's probably my favorite part of the show was that opening match. But I do have to give credit to Cody and AJ. They had the best match of the show. But Tagaloa coming out in the manner he did, I thought that was pretty impressive. And, you know, curious to see what happens with the Bloodline on SmackDown tomorrow night as I'm recording this on a Thursday. But Tagaloa joining WWE is pretty interesting. A good addition to the roster and a good addition to the tag team division as a whole. So, you know, G.O.D. linking it up with the Street Profits and the Usos and, you know, the New Catch Republic, more teams like New Day, whenever they link up with each other. You know, you got a lot of options. So, Austin Theory and Grace Waller, A-Town Down Under. So, AOP, the Authors of Pain, you know, they're a tag team. So I am glad to see GOD in WWE. I think that's a cool call. It really is. But overall, I really enjoyed Backlash. I thought it was a very, very good show from top to bottom. And I had a good time covering it this past Saturday. Saturday was a fun night, a fun day that I remember for the rest of my life. It was a very special night. And special day. Normally for me, for those who don't know, Saturdays are usually like my worst day of the week. For whatever reason in my life, like my worst luck happens on Saturdays and stuff like that. And those are the days I feel like lonely and stuff. So to have the birthday party I had, to have Backlash to cover that day, and everything that went on that day, it was just something that I'm very appreciative of, because most times they're not Saturday suck for me. But this past Saturday was very special. And again, I just want to say thanks to everybody who took time to wish me a happy birthday on Tuesday. It really meant a lot to me. And I'm glad to be here. And I think, you know, I think 30 looks good on me. I'm not going to lie. So... I mean, I'm in good spirits with all of this stuff. I really am. Speaking of good spirits, we had the return of the King of the Ring tournament. That's right. Men's and women's tournaments are commencing right now on Raw and SmackDown television. Today, Nick Aldis informed us that Bobby Lashley suffered an injury during training. So he's out of the King of the Ring tournament. He will not be medically cleared in time. So that means Angelo Dawkins will now be taking on Tama Tonga in the first round. Then, of course, you got other matches throughout the field here, where you got Carmelo Hayes against Baron Corbin, L.A. Knight against Santos Escobar, and Randy Orton, AJ Styles, linking it up on the SmackDown side. Raw happened on Monday for the King of the Ring. Which saw a couple of barn burners, man. Jey Uso defeated Finn Balor in the opening match. By the way, shout out to Adam Pearce. Adam Pearce is one of my favorite TV characters right now on Raw and SmackDown. I think he's killing it as an on-screen authority figure. But, like, just his mannerism when he's arguing with somebody on screen, and like he was with the Judgment Day at the beginning of the show, like, you don't run Monday Night Raw. I run Monday Night Raw. And then he's talking to people backstage, and he doesn't know what to do. And as people walk away, he's always like, I need a drink. Brother, I feel your pain, man. We may not agree with our taste of football teams, but from one Chicagoan to another Chicagoan, Anna Pierce, you're the man, and I got to give you your flowers, man. I love his work, and he's tremendous on TV. I am a big advocate of Adam Pearce. I think he does a great job. And it's funny when he says, I need a drink, because I feel his pain. I do. But I'm straight edge, so I don't drink. I'm like,
I'll like raise like my water jug or my water bottle and be like, hey, I agree with you. So that's that. Ilya Dragunov and Ricochet was fantastic. I was not surprised that they had a barn burner on Monday. That was fantastic. First showing for Ilya Dragunov getting the victory in a big way. So Ilya will be taking on Jey Uso next Monday, which should be a fun match. And then you got Gunther making Sheamus tap out on Monday in Hartford. Did not see that coming. Honestly, they were the main event, rightfully so. These guys have had a tremendous rivalry of matches over the last couple of years. And Gunther and Sheamus linked it up again on Raw this past Monday night. And again, it was a fantastic match. Now, much to the advantage of Gunther, Ludwig Kaiser gave Gunther the loophole he needed in order to put away Sheamus by attacking Sheamus' knee behind the referee's back. The referee ended up ejecting Ludwig from the ringside area. Ludwig Kaiser! But Gunther and Sheamus was fantastic. Gunther will be taking on the winner of Kofi Kingston and Rey Mysterio from a live event. Look, I understand that TV time is precious, and it's a three-hour show. I get it. You didn't want to have all of the programming being 20-minute matches for both the men's and women's, but I don't know how to feel about having these matches in the first round being on live events. I don't think that's cool. Especially seeing the promo that Kofi cut on Raw during the show. I'm like, man, I want to see this match. I hope there's a way they can upload Kofi and Ray to the YouTube channel so we can see the full match. The same thing with Shayna Baszler and Zelina Vega are for the show coming up. Live event coming up this weekend. So that's that. Then, for the women, you know, shout out to Io Sky. I thought it was a very good match. I thought Zoe Stark and Ivy Nile was okay, but the crowd wasn't really much into it, which was kind of a bummer to see that. But, you know, I thought, for the most part, I thought the ladies did a good job, especially that Natty and Io match. It felt like a PLE match. That's how good it was. And then Lia Valkyria made her debut. She got a victory over Dakota Kai. By the way, happy belated birthday. Shout-outs go out to Dakota Kai and Io Sky. So happy belated birthday, ladies. And I don't know if it's just me, but Dakota Kai gets hotter and hotter as the weeks go by. She's smoking, man. Salute to her and her waterfall. Mamma mia. So Lyra defeated Dakota Kai. Another solid match. Lyra will be taking on Zoe Stark coming up on Monday. That's going to be a very good match. And then we'll have Io either taking on Shayna Baszler or Zelina Vega. So we'll see how that plays out. So that's my thoughts so far with the King and Queen of the Ring. There was a couple other match announcements. We have Becky Lynch putting her women's world title on the line against Liv Morgan. We kind of saw that coming. We had triple threat match made official for the IC title. Sami Zayn putting the title on the line against Chad Gable and Bronson Reed. Looking forward to that. That should be pretty good as well. We'll see what happens with Logan Paul, who he could possibly fight in Jeddah. We'll see how that one plays out. You know, I think it'd be cool if it was like Logan and Andrade. I think that'd be a good match. We'll have to see how that one plays out. But or you could do Logan against Montez Ford. You got options. But yeah. I don't know if Logan's on SmackDown tomorrow night. I'm not sure. We'll have to see. Anyways, let's continue on here. Last thing I do want to mention really quick for this week in WWE is NXT again. I got a chance to cover NXT this past Tuesday. Really, really excited to attend my first NXT show live in person at the Performance Center coming up on June 4th, which is actually the same day I'm landing in Orlando for my trip. My job, a lot of people were asking me this week, like, hey, Josh, what you going to do? It's your 30th birthday. How are you going to celebrate it? Well, my real celebration for my 30th birthday will start on June 4th when I'm out of Chicago and I'm by myself for a week in my favorite place, which is Orlando, Florida, and Central Florida as a whole. So I'm very excited for that trip. It's going to be a lot of fun. But anyways, like I was saying, I'm very excited to go to the Performance Center for the first time to watch NXT in person. I've been to takeovers before, but this will be my first time being at an NXT show at the Performance Center. It'll be the go-home show before their Battleground show in Vegas. I'm excited because the brand's a lot of fun. By the way, if you have not seen Trick Williams on the Supernova sessions this week on NXT TV, go out of your way to watch it. It's definitely pure sports entertainment. That's how, like, hilarious that segment was. At first, I thought I was like watching like a skit from the Maury Show or Jerry Springer, but the segment was pretty good. You can go check out Trick Williams on the Supernova sessions. But yeah, that was a lot of fun. I'm really excited to be back in Orlando. This will be my last vacation there before I move down there at the end of the year. So it's going to be a good time. I'm looking forward to the beginning of June. It should be a good time. But all that being said, that's what happened this week in WWE. And yes, sir, before you know, we got another pay-per-view to preview coming up in a couple weeks for King and Queen of the Ring coming up in Saudi Arabia later this month. So be on the lookout for that. And by the way, if you guys ever want to see my transcripts, my play-by-play articles, check them out at WrestlingHeadlines.com in the results section. Pretty easy to find. And you don't have to pay any money for it, too. So, well, all that being said, that's what happened this week in WWE. But on that note, before we get to our main event segment, we do something here on the Hoots Podcast every single week where I award jackasses for conducting themselves in a jackassian manner. And we like to crown those winners as the Clown of the Week.
I'm not Clown. Clown. Clown.
Clown.
Clown. You're big.
Clown.
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 One more time for good measure.
I'm not Clown.
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 Clown. You're big.
Clown.
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 Oh, man. Time for the Clown of the Week, man. Let's see what we got here, ladies and gentlemen. I got three winners of the Clown of the Week. First is a two-way tie with Kendrick Lamar and Drake because if you want my honest opinion, I think Kendrick Lamar has had the edge over Drake on pure rap skills. But just from the content of what I've been listening to with a miss of this rap beef and the back and forth that we've been having to sit through for this past week and a half, I kind of feel sorry for both guys. And rap beefs, and now people are getting shot along the way. Like, I think one of Drake's security guards at his mansion got shot the other day, which is ridiculous. Both of you guys are definitely worthy for being the Clown of the Week because you talk big with the rats, but do nothing in real life. But no, we have to bring guns in to make ourselves look edgy and shit. I don't rock with that stuff. I don't. Another reason why today's hip hop and rap is pure manure, if you want my honest opinion. But that's neither here nor there. The other Clown of the Week this week goes to the NFL. What a way to work us, Roger. I was sitting here all week. I'm like, all right, it's my birthday. It's a good week. Get to chill. Maybe watch the playoff basketball. And guess what? We'll get the schedule release on Thursday, which should be tonight as I'm recording this. But no, after teasing us for 2 weeks that the schedule release was supposed to be revealed soon, and making it out as it's going to be like a surprise special on a Thursday. Now we got to wait till next Wednesday for for the schedule release. I, like every other Bears fan, want to see what's going to happen with our team this year, where we're going to start, how many primetime games we're going to have. What a way to work us, bro. Seriously, Roger Goodell, any league office in the NFL, you are definitely the con of the week. And on that note, we got one more segment to do here on the podcast at Hoots, which will take a trip into the Backports Q&A session. And I will be finishing up our first trip of reading this book here, Never Finish, Unshackle Your Mind, and Win the War Within by David Goggins. This is a gift that I bought for myself for my birthday this year. As many of you guys know, I'm in the middle of a transformation project, and it's not just weight loss. It's a complete mental and spiritual transformation for myself. And we read the first chapter in the beginning of the show, in case any of you guys are just tuning in. And I'll read the second part of the first chapter here to wrap it up. But we'll do that after this commercial break here. As you're listening and watching to episode 412 of the Hoots Podcast, we'll be right back with the Backports Q&A session. Yeet. And welcome back to the Hoops Podcast. One more segment to do here before we put a ribbon on the bow for this week's episode. Don't forget to like this video and subscribe to our channel as we're on the road to 1,000 subscribers on YouTube. I appreciate the support. Let's do this. Let's go to the Good Brothers, the Backports Q&A session. As we start off in tradition here for the podcast of Hoops, we got the Good Brother Chris Zaletta at XTeamZaletta24X. On Twitter, make sure to throw up the X for Chris. He says, what up, Boots? Here's the questions for the Q&A this week. Is there anybody in NXT that can use Robert Stone as a mouthpiece? Yes. Lexus King. There you go. Lexus King. That'd be my pick. Gallus wasn't drafted. Can you see them maybe helping Drew McIntyre and maybe debuting at Clash of the Castle? This is a great idea, brother. I'm going to say yes and yes to both ideas. I like that a lot. I think it's overdue for the Gallus boys to be on Raw or SmackDown, so I don't know why they wouldn't work. And it'd be nice for Drew to have his own little faction now, and he doesn't have to be screwed over all the time. You know what I mean? So I'm not opposed to that. All right. Favorite match from Backlash, Cody and AJ. That was my pick. Is Anthony Edwards currently top five in the NBA? No, but he's definitely top 10. I'm a big fan of his work. I'm a fan of those guys who are about their business and they let their work on the court speak for themselves, but I'm definitely a fan of Anthony Edwards. Would I put him in the top five? No, not yet. Who should Cody face at King and Queen of the Ring? Unless it's going to be a rematch with AJ, I would like to see something with Cody and Kevin Owens. Or you could do something with Cody and Solo. You know, you got options there. But if I had my druthers, I would go with Cody and KO. Who wins the King and Queen Ring tournaments? Well, that's a good question. But I'm going with... I'm going with Gunther for the King of the Ring, and I'm going to go with Tiffany Stratton for the women. I think Queen Tiffy has a nice sound to it, and Tiffany would be a good pick, just in my opinion. But who knows? You know, it'll be interesting if Blair Davenport was one to win the tournament. I would pop for that. I think that'd be pretty cool, but that would be my pick. With the draft in the rearview mirror, who steps up and elevates both men and women's side in NXT? Man, that's hard to say, man. Definitely more Tony D'Angelo. I think Sol Ruka has the opportunity to make another leap and channel another gear within her. I can see that. You know, it's a good opportunity for Noam Dar, obviously, to become another main event guy, obviously. Those are the three off the top of my head. Sol Ruka, Noam Dar, and who else did I mention? There's a whole bunch of people from NXT you can choose right now. It's hard to pick just a lot of them. Do you think we get one more run for Beth Phoenix? No. Is there a possibility that I see her in AEW? Possibly. But do I see her having a run per se? No. I don't see that happening anytime soon. With that being said, though, let's get to you on here. All right. Last question here for the Q&A this week from Chris says, well, two more questions here. Thoughts on Alicia Taylor getting called up to SmackDown? Pretty cool. I'm happy for her. Very well deserved. I had a tremendous run in NXT, and I like her work. I know some people like to knock her for her haircuts and stuff because she's a musician outside of wrestling, but she's good at her craft. I don't know why Alicia Taylor shouldn't be a ring announcer. I think she does a good job. The final question here is, do you think Natty crosses over to TNA for one night to face Jordynne Grace at Bound for Glory? Good question there. You know what, Chris? I'm going to say yes. I think Natty will participate in Bound for Glory this year. I really do. But on that note, that concludes the Backports Q&A session for this week. If you guys ever have any questions or want to participate in the segment, all you have to do is hit me up at Twitter at the Hoots Podcast or thehootspodcast@gmail.com. That's how you participate. We do this every single week before we wrap up our episodes. But before we do head off for the weekend, I want to go back here to Never Finish, Unshackle Your Mind, and Win the War Within. Now, for those who missed the beginning of the show, I read the first chapter of this book from David Goggins. And really what happens here, where David is sharing his life story, but also giving you the steps of winning the war within yourself. And he separates those within the chapter that he's talking about within his life and in the steps along the way in that section is called Evolution. So what we're going to do, since I read the first chapter, I'm going to read Evolution number one here, and then that's how we're going to wrap up the show for this week. So let's take a look at this, shall we? Evolution number one. I worked in emergency medical services on and off for 50 years. When an ambulance arrives on the scene of a severe trauma situation, we are immediately shotgunned into what's known as the golden hour. In the vast majority of cases, 60 minutes is all the time we have to save critically injured victims. The clock starts the moment the accident happens and doesn't stop until the patient arrives at the hospital trauma center. By the time we get to the scene of the accident, we are already behind, which means it's vital that our assessment of each patient is rapid and on point. Some are identified as load and go because they need specific time-sensitive interventions that we can't do ourselves. Others are identified as stay and play. Though their condition may be dire, they have issues our skills are built to address to ensure they survive the trip to the hospital. One of the first things we do when we get to a patient is check their ABCs. Airway, breathing, and circulation. We need to make sure their airway is unobstructed, their lungs are inflating, and they aren't bleeding profusely. Usually ABC issues are obvious, but every once in a while we come across a distracting injury. Picture the shattered leg twisted up way up over the victim's head. When you see a limb in a place that it doesn't belong, it's easy to become fixated. It looks so gruesome that human instinct is to address that problem first and block everything else out. I've seen a lot of EMS personnel get sucked down that rabbit hole, but a badly broken and dislocated leg typically won't kill anyone. unless it distracts us from realizing that their airway is also blocked or that they are gurgling because their lungs are filled with fluid and they are in danger of bleeding out internally. A distracting injury in the EMS universe is anything that entices a medical professional to forget their procedures. It can happen to anyone, which is why we are trained to remain alert to those distractions. It's truly a matter of life or death. The same can be said of the distracting injuries I carried. By the time I was 24, I was too distracted by child abuse, neglect, and racist taunts to see all of the fucked up things in my life over which I had direct influence. Nothing that happened to me could be considered a fatal condition on its own, yet I spent so much time worrying about what my father did to us and felt so alone. I was refusing to live. And when you spend your life regretting what was or asking why me, you eventually die having accomplished nothing at all. The trip to Buffalo was pure distraction. I wasn't ready to put in the work to change my life, so I went on an evidence collecting mission. In fact, by the time I figured it out, it was almost impossible for me to become a SEAL. I was so heavy that if I had been even a few pounds heavier, I would not have been able to lose the necessary weight in the allotted time. I had to take extreme measures, like eating two tiny meals while working out 6 to 8 hours a day for 10 weeks. But when I started to shed weight and shift my mindset, I realized I had never been alone as I thought. I always told myself that nobody could possibly understand me or what I went through. But as I looked around, I noticed that there are a lot of motherfuckers out there with distracting injuries stuck neck deep in their past. These days, I hear from them all the time. Some suffered child abuse or lost a parent very young. Others grew up feeling ugly or stupid. They were bullied and beaten down or had no friends in school at all. It's not always the childhood minefield that fucks us up. There's no shortage of psychological and emotional snags in adult life. Everyday people suffer bankruptcy, foreclosure, divorce, and catastrophic injury. They get cheated or robbed by their so-called loved ones. They get sexually assaulted. They lose everything they own in a fire or flood. The children die. It's so easy to get lost in the fog of life. Tragedy hunts us all, and that any event that causes suffering will linger longer than it should if you let it. Because our sad stories are enable us to grade ourselves on a forgiving curve. They give us latitude and justification to stay lazy, weak-minded motherfuckers, and the longer it takes for us to process that pain, the harder it is to reclaim our lives. Sometimes weaknesses and laziness are rooted in hate and anger, and until we receive the confession, apology, or compensation we believe we are owed, we stay stuck in our shit as a form of self-righteous rebellion against our tormentors or even against life itself. Some of us become entitled. We think our pain entitles us to feel sorry for ourselves or that we are entitled to good fortune because we survived hell. Of course, feeling entitled doesn't make it so. Understand the clock is always ticking and at some point your golden hour will expire unless you take action. People who get lost in their past, the ones who bore their friends and family with the same tragic story over and over again, over and over without showing a hint of progress, remind me of a skydiver who becomes too fixated on their tangled parachute. They know they have a backup ready to go, but burn so much time trying to fix the primary chute that they forget to track their all-timer. And by the time they get cut the first shut away and pull the second ripcord, it's too late. Part of the problem is that they have become terrified of pulling that second cord because if it's also fucked up, then it truly will be helpless. That is a mental trap set by fear. We cannot afford to remain afraid of cutting away dead weight to save ourselves. I was that skydiver for far too long. My father was violent. My mom was broken. I was bullied, laughed at, and misunderstood. Check, check, and checkmate. Yet, and I was breathing free. I was not bleeding. Physically, I was alive and well and perfectly capable of cutting all of that bullshit away. I wasted way too much of my life telling myself the same sad story. I needed to move forward. It was time to write something new. If an act of God of nature tore your life apart, the good news is that you really have nobody to blame. Yet the randomness of it all can feel so personal, as if you've been marked for doom by the fates. If you feel wronged by someone else, you may be waiting on a confession or apology in order to move forward. But I'm sorry to say the apology, that tearful confession you've been dreaming of, will never come. The good news is that you don't need anybody else to free you from your trauma. You can do it on your own. My father never apologized to me. Nobody ever said sorry for anything I went through. I had to come to the conclusion that while I didn't deserve any of it, I was my main problem and primary obstacle. I had given Trunis Goggins all of my power. I had to take it back. I had to defuse my demon. I had to shrink him down to the lowly, pathetic figure he was by humanizing him. Just as there was no other way to come out of the gauntlet that was my childhood except fucked up, I had to see that he was morally fucked up piece of shit because of what he went through. Once I understood that, it was up to me to either do the hard work to break that cycle or stay cursed. Like medics on a scene of a car accident, we all must act with a sense of urgency and tune into that ticking clock in the back of our minds, because there's a drop-dead time on everything we do in life. All of our dreams and visions come with the expiration dates, etched in invisible ink. Windows of opportunity can and do close, so it's imperative that we do not waste time on bullshit. None of us have any clue what's coming for us or when our time might run out, which is why I do my best to ignore anything that is counterproductive. I'm not suggesting we act like robots, but we need to understand that forward motion gives our lives momentum. We need to remember that sometimes chaos will descend and a clear highway can be wiped out by a flash flood in the blink of an eye. When that happens, a lot of motherfuckers look for a cozy place to hunker down and hide out until the storm passes. I'm only human, they say. When holy hell rains down upon them and they feel drained and powerless, they cannot conceive of a way to keep going. I understand that impulse, but if I had succumbed to the I'm only human mentality, I never would have dug myself out of the deep hole I was in at 24 years old. Because the second you utter those words, the white towel is fluttering in the air, and your mind stops looking for more fuel. I didn't know for sure if I ever find my way out of darkness. I just knew that I cannot throw in the towel, and neither can you. Because there's no towel in our corner. There is only water in a cup, man. And if those are your only options, you have no choice but to keep fighting until you overcome the every last thing that you once held you the fuck back. You have been preoccupied by bullshit for way too long. It's time to switch your focus to the things that will slingshot you forward. Hashtag distracting injuries. Hashtag never finished. There you go. Bring you up here to the screen. See you right there. 40 pages of this book here. There's, let's see. Let's see how many pages we got here. Got little pictures here of him in the Harvey Seal. That's pretty cool. Yeah. 305 pages. We read 40 here on this episode. I'm going to do this every week as we follow along with this journey. I hope you guys take something positive from this. This is a nice thing to do, especially with the being Mental Health Awareness Month and showing how important it is to me. I'm dedicating a portion of our show every week to this book, and I hope it can help you out as much as helping me out, because his story is very eye-opening, and I hope it benefits you just as much as it's going to benefit me. With that being said, I want to thank y'all for hanging out with us this week. This has been episode 412 of the Hoots Podcast. I'm Joshy. You can follow me on Twitter at the Hoots Podcast. Hit me up at Instagram at Josh Lopez Music. Please like our video, subscribe to the channel on YouTube so now you never miss an episode, but it helps us expand to reach the show. And as we're on the road to 1,000 subscribers, we're getting closer and closer to getting to that point. Also, along the way, don't forget to follow us on Spotify, free of charge. Type in the Hoots Podcast in the Google search engines, and it's on basically any other podcasting platform you want to find for yourself. And it's free of charge, as we do every single Thursday. Don't forget, folks, be the authentic product that is yourself. And remember, nobody dictates the pace of your life but yourself and the man upstairs. I love you all. Have a wonderful weekend. Once again, I want to thank all of you who took time your schedule this week to wish me a happy 30th birthday. It really meant a lot to me. It touched my heart, and I'm very grateful, and I love each and every single one of you who sent positive messages my way this week. It really meant a lot to me, and it didn't go unnoticed, so I appreciate y'all. So I'm Joshy. This has been episode 412 of the Hoots Podcast as our road to episode 500 continues. I love y'all. Have a wonderful weekend. We'll talk to y'all next week. Yeet.
Bye-bye, bitch. Ha-ha.